That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, whatever name you want, you can choose. And we are here for an hour to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to make you better with your money. I mean, schools don't teach it, unis don't teach it. It's not really like your job is going to teach it to you either. So come along every Monday at 4 o'clock to That Money Show, and we will do it on their behalfs. So what have we got coming up in this week's show? Well, we always love to bring in what's going on within the economy, within the news. Not just the boring stuff, not the irrelevant stuff, but the things that actually affect the money in your pocket. The news that will make you sound smarter, more up to date with your friends and family, and will transform your finances going forward. And then, of course, we bring in a range of experts, famous faces, guests to discuss their own personal finance journeys and advice to hopefully share some lessons and make you better with your money. And coming up this week is Donna Del Nevo, the chair and spokesperson of the Payment Choice Alliance, as well as Kim Hulse, the business consultant at K Hulse Consulting. All of that to look forward to. But first, shall we kick off with the news? I think that's a bloody good idea. And the first story that I bring you today is a little bit of a sad one. So I don't know how many people right now, potentially in their early 20s, late teen years, are still going clubbing. Well, it was quite a big thing back in my day. I'm only 27 years old. Why am I saying back in my day? It was quite a big thing when I went to university. Pretty much every night there was something else going on. So I would love for someone to message us on at That Money Show on Instagram to let me know if you're still a student or something like that, and that's still a big part of the scene, going clubbing on most nights. But the story that I bring you today is about new figures showing that 10 nightclubs are currently closing every month in the UK and fewer people are going on nights out. I mean, this is surprising. Not really. I suppose during COVID, they got hit awfully bad. It was basically just banned outright. And I don't know. I feel like we're moving into a slightly new age with social media, where this kind of like slow life, slow living is becoming a bit more of a trend. You're seeing more like 21, 22-year-olds being like, I'm going to bed at, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night. So maybe that's part of the reason. I don't know. Maybe let's actually see what's going on with the statistics, and then we can discuss maybe my social media for you page. I mean, over the past 4 years, the UK has lost 37% of its nightclubs. That's roughly 300 closures. A lot of the reasons as to why this is going on is about operational costs soaring, few people going out because of financial pressures, perhaps just because it's not so trendy anymore, I'm not so sure. And the NTIA, who are the Nighttime Industry Association, did a survey of 500 businesses and revealed that 70% of venues that are still operating are either barely breaking even or they are operating at a loss. So basically, things are not going good or looking good for the night industry. A further bit of study from them, the NTIA, so again, the Nighttime Industries Association, says that things are looking so bad right now for nightclubs and clubbing in general that if the current rate of closures continue, as of the 31st of December 2029, there will be no more clubs in the UK. Now, I'm trying to think when the last time I even went to a club was. Probably like once or twice a year. Like, you know, you go for that odd party that I don't even know what the cause is anymore. At 27, I want to be tucked in bed at 10 o'clock at night. Don't know what's happened to me. Literally, about 5 years ago, when I was a student, I would be like going to bed at whatever, 12, 1 o'clock, up at 7 or 8 or whatever it was for my 9 a.m. lecture. And I could just do that on rinse and repeat. Sometimes I used to go to the gym at like 11 o'clock at night. I really don't know what's going on with me. But maybe this is just like a symptom of the times. During COVID, everyone got used to being in their own space, I suppose. 4 or 5 years locked in at home. Not 4 or 5 years locked in at home, but you know what I mean. Over a 4 or 5 year period. And now all of a sudden, we're all just a bit too comfy and we'd all rather have a night in than a night out. I mean, someone on the Watching Live has said stag do. I guess stag do's and hen do's are basically propping up the entire nighttime industry, full stop. So, I mean, a few other kind of anecdotes. Apparently those between 18 and 35 are apparently just going to bed earlier. The hottest new bedtime for 20-somethings is currently 9 p.m, according to one study. And a woman, a 32-year-old actor, apparently is just like, yeah, I like to go to bed between 8 and 9 o'clock. And, you know, social media has helped making an early bedtime more acceptable. This idea of soft life on TikTok. I mean, I've actually never seen that before. But yeah, that's just a thing. So really bad for the industry. I suppose you're going to start to see a bit more of a pivot of the industry. Some new ideas, things coming out. I mean, I saw one thing about a day club, which is basically for people that want to go clubbing but don't want to go out at night and late and all that kind of stuff. So now they're doing day clubbing. That could be. I don't know really what this does mean for the industry. Like I said, I don't expect by the 31st of 2029 to have no more clubs in the UK. I'm assuming this is probably just peaks and troughs and currently they're out of trend and they will come back into trend. But who knows? Do let us know. Are you a bit of a are you a bit of a clubber? Someone has literally just written as a comment, I am 27 and I think I have around 10 nights out left in me and then I'm done. 10, yeah, I think I've probably got about 5. And on that merry note, what's else going on in the news? Well, the UK spend roughly, can you guess how much on Christmas decorations? I'll give you a clue. It ends with billion and it starts with 23. The UK spends roughly 23 billion pounds on Christmas decorations. And yes, I am talking to you right now. I want you to go into your bank balance right now and tell me how much have you spent on Christmas decorations. That's not Christmas presents. That is Christmas decorations. That is the tree. That is all the shiny shit that you put around the house. That's the stocks and the stockings. Well, stocks are stockings, but you know what I mean. That's whatever other decorations you do. The little star that you put on top of the tree, the new Govy lights. I don't know why I had to pick a specific brand like Govy, but I've seen them advertised everywhere in the night at the moment, that you stick all over your house. Apparently, on average, us Brits are spending £429 on Christmas decorations. That totals £23 billion nationwide. That's research of 2,000 people. And that number, in my opinion, is absolutely crazy. Just want to kind of like break this down for you. £429 on average. I heard, or the last study that I looked at was the average amount that people spend on Christmas presents, which is roughly £550 to £600. That's £1,000 on decorations per person and presents. £1,000 gone like that over the month of December. And it's not just that. Apparently, there is a huge amount of this being wasted. There's one study that says throughout one generation, there will be roughly 323 million boxes of waste from these decorations, or 1.3 million miles of lights. I mean, does anyone know how many miles it like to wrap around the Earth once? Is it like 28,000 kilometers? Am I making that up fully? Like 20,000 miles? Basically, you could wrap the amount of Christmas lights that are wasted around the Earth potentially several thousand times before you find the amount of waste. Some people obviously do recycle it themselves, but you are then just bringing the average down, and the actual person that buys new decorations on a yearly basis is then spending way more than £429. So how do you actually combat this figure? How can you actually get around being a bit more sustainable with your budget when it comes to Christmas? Well, the obvious one is buy and reuse. Buy things that isn't just a buy once. Reuse them every single year. I don't know if anyone's a fan of the plastic Christmas tree. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Or is there a recyclable Christmas tree that isn't just an actual tree, I guess, that you can recycle? But if so, that might be one way to cut down on costs. Or just obviously decorations, put them in a box, stick them somewhere so you can bring them out again next year. And then generally, just look to budget a little bit better. Keep an eye on the tally. I feel like one thing that happens around this time of year is that people spend until like they kind of think they're done, and then they'll go back and look at how much they spent. Whereas if you set a threshold, this year I'm spending £100 on decorations, full stop. And once you hit that amount, you stop. That's obviously a far more sensible way to get around this figure. And the last bit of news this week, it's about our good old friend Keir Starmer, who has pledged higher living standards in every region of the country. So, for those of you who don't know, the Prime Minister set out a fresh new set of milestones in a recent speech. And here are some of the things that you should be expecting to a country near you. Number one, raising the living standards in every part of the UK. Stressed that it was going to be in every single part in the UK. Do let us know where you're listening in from and whether or not you think the living standards are going to go up where you live. Number two, rebuilding Britain with 1.5 million homes in England and fast-tracking planning decisions. This is a big one. Part of their manifesto was to build 1.5 million homes. If those of you that can't do the maths, it's roughly 300,000 homes per year throughout their first term. Pretty scary numbers. Will they hit it? Who knows? Ending hospital backlogs to meet the NHS standard of 92% of patients in England waiting no longer than 18 weeks in elective treatment. So basically just re-stressing a lot of the manifesto. Putting police back on the beat. Giving children the best start in life with a record 75% of five-year-olds in England ready to learn when they start school. And securing homegrown energy. Has anyone heard of GB Energy? Well, apparently we're not done with it just yet. So that was a whole bunch of announcements that he made. And I think the key one that I want to pick up on is this idea of a higher living standard. Because it sounds great, doesn't it? If Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the country, says, I want to raise living standards in every part of the United Kingdom so working people have more money in their pocket as we aim to deliver the highest sustained growth in the G7. What does that actually mean? I know what it means in terms of have more money in their pocket. But what does a higher living standard mean? Well, for me, one of the clearest indicators of a higher living standard is after you have spent on all of your essentials, so after you've covered your rent, your bills, your mortgage, your childcare costs, your insurance, etc., etc. You know what I mean. The things that you need to pay for, not that you want. We're not talking about Netflix here, people. We're talking about the things that you need. And again, your Third Space Gym membership does not count as a need, okay? You can pay for Pure Gym. I'm not saying you should or you have to. I'm just saying that's the difference between a need and a want. But if that amount that people are keeping in their pocket after all of these essentials are kind of being flushed out or being paid for, that is where I see a higher living standard. Now, I am going to counteract that because the amount that that grows still needs to outpace inflation. So let's say, for example, the amount of disposable income, so the money you have left over after paying all of your bills, goes up by 5%. From this year to the next year. Sir Keir Starmer cannot come along and say that we have a higher standard of living if inflation went up by 6% that year. Because then theoretically, the disposable income that you have cannot actually do more with it. In fact, even if it was 6%, matching the amount, that, or they were both 5%, that still isn't a high living of standard. That is the same living standard. So that's just something that I want you to all bear in mind when you're thinking about the higher standard of living and what this does this actually mean and how this will affect you and how to monitor it over this term of Labour and in government. Anyway, that's everything. You guys are up to speed with the news. I could have trickled in a few more things going on there, like, you know, Bitcoin did cross over $100,000. Just going to throw that out there to people listening. That's not me going for or against. It's just updating you with what's going on. But stick around, guys, because I've got a great interview after this with Kim Hulls, a business consultant.
Fubar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister.
That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the
cray,
truth.
Cray.
And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now on the show is Kim Hulse, the business consultant. Kim, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. Now, I feel like I've got a lot of questions to throw at you, especially, I suppose, to help people around this season of shopping as they kind of look into things like loyalty cards, reward programs, looking at local businesses, etc. So if that's all right with you, should I just fire them away and you can tell me when you've had enough?
Absolutely.
Amazing. So in particular with loyalty cards and businesses, it seems like almost every single big supermarket, big shop seems to now have them as part of a scheme. And I just can't keep up. So I go into a shop, I don't know if I've even got the card on me. Do we need to sign up to every single one for every single business that we consider shopping at this season?
Well, the very short answer is no, we don't. But there's lots of things to consider. So loyalty schemes can be fantastic. They can give some really good rewards and discounts, but not all of them are equal. So I've got five questions to ask yourself as to whether you should sign up. So the first one is really, will you be spending regularly with that business to make the loyalty card worthwhile? If you're only going in once and you have no intention of going back again, it's probably not worth signing up to the loyalty scheme. Is the end prize worthwhile? What's that reward going to be? And is that worth you signing up to the reward scheme and giving away some of your information and some of your data? It might be that a loyalty scheme gives you early access to products or tickets, early bird offers or exclusive offers, and you might value that. So ask yourself if it's worthwhile then. And also ask yourself, how much do you need to spend in order to actually get to that reward? Is it asking you to collect so many points that it's going to take you forever to get there? And also, how long will it take before the reward expires? So can you actually cash in that reward and use it before it expires? So if you can answer those questions well, if you're going to be spending regularly with that business and the rewards are really worthwhile to you, and you talked about your cards getting lost, if you've got a little paper loyalty card and it gets stamped at the till every time, we've all got those scattered around the house and in drawers and hidden in handbags. So if it's easy to collect the points, if it's on a digital card on your phone, if it's with an app and it's an easy way to collect and spend your points, then that's another big tick to sign up to a reward scheme. So definitely where you spend often, it'd be worth considering and having a look at it. Maybe reasons why you don't. How much are you giving away to be in the rewards scheme? So are you just giving away your email address, or are you giving away lots of other information? And are you happy with the business keeping that data safe for you? And ultimately, are you buying what you really want and need, or are the reward schemes pushing you to buy things that you perhaps don't necessarily want or need? It's only a benefit if you need it.
I like that. You're asking lots of good questions. They're getting me thinking about the range of ones that I've signed up for in the past, and I'm starting to question myself a little bit. But what is that kind of key negative side? You kind of said about giving away your data, but a lot of people I think that I speak to go, I don't really care. Like, they've got my email address and they've got my name and whatever it is. So what is the negative of giving away this information to a lot of these companies if, for example, you say, like, you're not actually going to get much benefit out of their reward scheme?
Well, it depends what your view is. If you sign up to emails, and you could be getting lots of emails from their businesses. Now, this time of year, I'm finding that really useful. Some of my favourite retailers are emailing me to say what offers are on and prompting me to buy my Christmas gifts. But if you're inundated on emails, that might be a disadvantage to you. And you want your data to be secure. So lots of leading retailers, lots of independent retailers will keep your data secure. But you just want to make sure that those businesses are respecting your data as you want them to.
Oh, the email inbox, I might have to disagree with you because it is stressing me out, especially around Black Friday. I've never received so many emails in a single day in my entire life. And I find myself reading the first few, but then just like delete on the next ones. And I can probably tell you a lot of people, you know, when you look at their phone and they say they've got 3,753 unread emails, that little red circle of how many they have. I've got a feeling most of those were probably Black Friday offers just from the past 2 weeks or so. So I can definitely understand that one. And I mean, my personal recommendation is please unsubscribe from those emails that don't actually serve you in any way, shape or form.
Exactly.
Have you seen any good ones at the moment that people probably should consider? So loyalty programs, reward schemes that are worth considering?
Well, again, they're worth considering when you're going to be spending with them. So I think the big ones that a lot of people are subscribed to are the supermarket ones, yeah, where you're directly getting savings as you spend because you're getting discounts because you are signed up to the rewards scheme at the big supermarkets. There can be extra benefits with the supermarket loyalty schemes because you can then redeem further points with their brand partners. So that's one. We all shop at supermarkets, so have a look and compare the loyalty schemes that are there. You've also got coffee chains that offer you points when you go there, and again you can then redeem those points for food and drinks. If you are an avid coffee drinker and you're going to coffee shops regularly, then be worth it. Another good one is fuel. Petrol is an expense that most people have to cater for in their monthly budget. So if you can use rewards just to take a little bit of the pain away when we're spending that money on petrol, then that's worth it. But I'd also consider local schemes. Okay. So those independent businesses where you spend money with them, they're worth considering too, because not only are you getting a benefit, but you're putting a little bit of money in the local economy.
Interesting. So, I mean, the supermarket one has always been a little bit of a pet peeve for me because it almost feels obviously silly not to sign up to a lot of them because of, like you mentioned, the immediate savings that you're going to get, especially around this time of year. Most people are shopping an excess amount of groceries. You're going to get some significant savings. But it almost seems like instead it's not really that you're making savings. It's more like you get punished if you're not part of these loyalty schemes and you have to sign up to every single one. And the prices are basically either extortionate or just they get brought back down to normal with like, not to name any names, but club card prices, as an example, who have been under quite a lot of scrutiny because their prices aren't actually great. They just hike up the non-club card price. Is it just at the point now where the supermarkets have won and we just have to give in and accept if we want to save some money, we just need to get that loyalty card?
Well, that's a whole new debate on where consumers sit in that. And it'd be interesting to see where it all goes in 2025. It's what your view, I think it should. For me, I'd want to pay a price, and rewards are more about rewarding loyalty. And encouraging me to spend more often within a business. But I sometimes go into a supermarket now, and if I haven't got a loyalty card, then I'll only buy the absolute thing that I've gone in because I have to have a loaf of bread in that moment. But I will then buy all my other things from the supermarket I've got my card with, because I want to access the better prices.
Yeah. What have you got any tips for people that are partaking in these loyalty schemes? They've got a few local businesses, they've got some of the big supermarkets, they've got some of the stores, they've got their email sign up for loyalty schemes. Like, do you have any recommendations of ways that people can track multiple loyalty schemes in one go to make sure that, for example, you know, they go to that shop, they have signed up in the past, they've just forgotten about it, and they're going to miss out on a discount just because they can't remember which one's which?
Yeah, well, there are a few strategies you can employ. Most of us have notes of some form on our phone, so you could have a list in notes on your phone of the rewards that you've signed up to. If the retailer offers a digital card, then that can be in your wallet on your phone as well. But it's about thinking more strategically, especially around Christmas. So having that Christmas shopping list, that gift list of what you want to get, and then having a look at where your loyalty schemes are. And if you can buy a product that's priced equally across all the retailers, then choose the supply, the retailer that you've got your reward scheme with, because then you'll get the points with it. Or have a look and see which is better for me, taking that 10% discount or building up my awards, because I'm just about to get a threshold which unlocks a whole load of benefits. So it's thinking strategically and weighing up where the rewards are and where the offers are, and thinking about, am I building up rewards that I'm actually going to benefit from and use?
Mm. Kim, I really appreciate all of that. This has been some really great advice, especially around this season, like I said, where consumerism, if that's even a word, is at its heightened and height of all year round. Is there any kind of leaving tip or trick or piece of advice that you would like to leave the listener with today?
So I would keep on track of your rewards. Keep on track of when your rewards expire. You don't want to build up all those points only having that reward disappear because you've forgotten about it. So definitely keep on track and look at the terms and conditions so that you're aware what you're signing up to and what the pros and cons of each scheme are. And don't forget your independents. They might not be advertising it as much on their websites, but if you've got a favourite independent, ask them if they've got a loyalty scheme.
Brilliant. I like it. Even if it's not advertised, it might exist. If you're a loyal customer, you should get some kind of loyalty scheme. Kim, thank you so much for your time on That Money Show today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So I do want to kind of pick up that conversation around loyalty schemes a little bit more, because I've got a few thoughts in it, especially ones that kind of Kim got me thinking about throughout that part of the show. And number one, I do want to stress this idea of signing up to loyalty schemes or buying things for the sake of a loyalty scheme or a reward or a discount that you didn't actually want or need in the first place. And one of the most, well, one of the biggest examples that I can think of that you might not have thought of as a loyalty scheme, but is, for example, the American Express reward points or Avios points, whichever way you would like to call them. They're slightly different things, but that's fine. We don't discuss the technicals here. And a lot of people start spending on a credit card because they get points. And they're like, oh, of course I'm going to put it on my credit card. I want the air miles. I want the points, etc., etc. Then what happens is they get a year, 2 years down the line. They're like, oh, I don't really have enough points to actually do anything with. 3 years down the line, they're like, I don't even remember about getting points in the first place. And then 4 years down the line, they're hooked on spending on a credit card because of a point system that they don't even understand. They don't know how to use. They've never have used. And they're in debt now because they've got interest on a credit card with a crazy high interest rate, because the rewards are theoretically very good if you know how to use them. And these are the things that I really want to warn you about. Amex is obviously quite a unique example, but it is about trying to like gather up loads of points at a local shop where you overspend in order to get some kind of reward in the first place. Theoretically, let's say you have to spend an extra 10, 20, 30 pounds to get, you know, £5 worth of rewards. Just think to yourself a little bit more logically, is this a fair trade-off? Is me spending an excessive £30 that I didn't really need to spend to get £5 worth of rewards? Obviously, when you're hearing me say that out loud, doesn't make so much sense. But of course, if it's the reverse, do take advantage of them. And Then I do like to play both sides of it. I do like to play devil's advocate, or in this case, angel's advocate for awards. Because don't sleep on those quick wins. It's so easy, especially this time of year. You sign up, you give them your email, and it's a 10% discount. If that's a large purchase and you're saving 10% straight away like that, do not sleep on those kind of rewards. Most websites, especially if you leave something in the checkout basket, or you know, you go onto it and you just click around a few times, all of a sudden something does flash up and it does say, you know, 10% off, 15% off, first time customers. I mean, I am one to type welcome 10 into every single checkout that I ever shop at. Welcome 10 works a treat. Honestly, if you haven't tried it, do try it. So yeah, that's it. Rewards, be wary. They can be brilliant, but don't allow it to make you spend in excess. Now, it is my favorite time of the entire show, Money Tip of the Week, where I like to give you something short, something practical, something you can really get your teeth into after the show's over, of course, because, you know, you're listening to the show, you just sit back and relax and then take advantage of this practical tip at the end of it. So it's time for Money Tip of the Week. And this is all about starting to think a little bit about 2025. Now, do not roll your eyes at me. I know it's not 2025 just yet, but it is the 9th of December, which means in roughly 21, 22 days, it will be January. You will be onto that whole New Year's resolution, New Year, New Me. You will be thinking, oh, this is the year I'm going to take charge of my finances. And hopefully, for most of you, you'll actually follow through on this. But one of the best pieces of advice I ever got is to start thinking about this now. Your work might be slightly slowing down as we get towards Christmas. More people might be starting to go off on holiday. You know, the workload might be decreasing. You might have taken a week off leave, you know, the week before Christmas, just to allow yourself to de-stress and decompress before that last week of the year that you've got as a holiday. So this might be the time to just, I'm not telling you to get fully into your New Year's resolutions for financial stuff, but just to start letting it tickle your brain. So for example, just have a think. Is this the year that you're finally going to build an emergency fund? Is this the year that you're finally going to start investing your first pound? Is this the year you're finally going to start contributing towards your pension? Is this the year you're finally going to start putting some money away every single month towards a house deposit? Or is this the year that you're going to do all of the above because you're going to be bloody fantastic? Now, my advice would be just start with one. Start with one. Like, please, just start with one. All of them are great. Write them all down, but just start practically applying one, because otherwise, you know the classic thing. You try to do 5 years New Year's resolutions, you'll end up with zero. You try and do one, you'll end up with one. One better than zero. Quick maths, you know. I would start having a little think about it, which one makes the most sense, which one makes the most practical sense to you, and then start thinking about a way, month by month, week by week, you can break this down into smaller mini steps. Because the big step, for example, saving an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses, you will have tucked away for emergencies, very self-explanatory. Let's say that sounds really overwhelming, because 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses is about $5,000. You want to go down to $1,000. Set little milestones. Start with 50 quid, get to 100, get to 500, get to 1,000, etc., etc. Really, really break it down step by step. And I think this is the time to do it. So January 1st, you can hit the ground running. You don't spend the first few weeks of January pondering, making the mistakes and giving up. You do the opposite, where you spend now coming up with the steps that you implement come January 1st. Do we have ourselves a deal, people? If you could respond, I assume all of you are shouting, we have ourselves a deal, Gabriel. Thank you very much. Now, stick around, because we've got a little break coming up, and then I've got Don Delvino, chair and spokesperson of the Payment Choice Alliance, after this break.
FUPAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my Yes I Yes sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson. From these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the
cray,
truth.
Cray.
And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show, live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And I am joined, as promised before the break, with, I'm joined by Don Del Nevo, the chair and spokesperson of the Payment Choice Alliance. Don, how are you doing today?
Well, it's Ron, Gabriel, but don't worry. Yeah, I'm doing fine.
Ron, I've just looked up and I've seen Ron on the screen and Don on my sheet, but don't, we're all good. I'll call you Ron from now on, I promise.
Yeah.
We're all right. Well, Ron, thank you for joining us live on That Money Show. I really appreciate it. And I think I've got a few questions to ask you about what's going on with cash in this country, because the old saying, cash is king, well, it seems to be, you know, becoming less and less as we go on. I mean, is that what you're seeing?
Well, no, actually, the British Retail Consortium have just reported that cash use has gone up for the second year running, and Link, the ATM operators, who should know a thing or two, they just did a survey which shows that 45 million people in the UK still want the option to use cash. So rumours of cash's death are certainly exaggerated.
Well, there we go. That's actually what I like to hear, because I feel like we're starting to hear more and more problems around some places not taking cash in a shop. And of course, like you've just said, it's the opposite. More and more people want to spend in cash, want to have cash on them, want to have some level of cash usage within their life. So are there more problems in society as shops start to go cashless? Or again, are we seeing the reverse, where the cashless shops are deciding to do a bit of a U-turn on that decision?
Some of the businesses are doing a U-turn. I'm the chair, as you mentioned, of the Payment Choice Alliance, and we've been going to businesses like, you know, some of the pubs companies, and they have changed their course, and instead of rejecting cash, they're accepting cash again. But, you know, we think that we need a law in this country that means that people's cash has to be accepted. You know, they've got laws like that in France and Norway and Spain, all around Europe and a lot of American states. So it's ridiculous that businesses can decide one way or the other. We've all earned the money that we have to spend, and we should be allowed to spend it when we want to, not, you know, decided by the particular business that we happen to have gone into that day.
Absolutely. I mean, you could argue that just from a logical perspective, someone comes into your shop with money, physical money, asking to give it to you in exchange for your products. Surely the basic, the standard setting should be, yes, sir, I will take your money in exchange for the thing I want to sell, you know?
Well, you obviously believe that, Gabriel, that the customer's always right, and I would agree with you, but some businesses have decided otherwise. But it's not the majority of businesses. There's probably, in London, about 20% of businesses, and other parts of the country less, that have decided to you know, go cashless. But the problem is that it makes it difficult for people. You know, people say, well, you can use your app and Apple Pay. Well, 8 million people don't have smartphones, so they can't use apps. Then we've got people who haven't got bank accounts. Then we've got people who've got disabilities. Then we've got people who budget using cash. 15 million people in this country budget using cash. So for all those reasons, you know, because all those groups will be very badly handicapped if cash is not accepted, we need to have a law. And we also need a law because all the other payment methods are tracked, you know, digital payment methods are tracked, and they all depend on computer systems. So if you don't want to be tracked, you want to keep your privacy, and you also don't want to be, you know, potentially ruined by hackers, because we all know there's lots of computer hackers around. We need cash. It never gets hacked. It never crashes. It always works. So it's perfect from the public's point of view in that respect.
What about, I suppose, playing a bit of devil's advocate with you for a second? This idea that, you know, times change, things develop, things happen. So perhaps it is time to phase out this form of money. Because at the end of the day, money is just an exchange of something of value, right? And we are moving from a physical world into a digital world. That's happening, obviously, a large range of cases. And I understand, like you said, there are still quite a lot of people that are still within that physical world. So maybe we're not quite as far down the line as we thought. But by forcing, I suppose, shops to not allow themselves to transform into that digital reality, which is probably the way things will end up eventually, you are, you know, in a way stopping or slowing down this evolution. I know that obviously there are, that sounds a little bit, you know, cyborgy, and like we're thinking about robots in the future and everything being like that. But like I said, like cash and money in and of itself is also quite a relatively new form of currency. So in the same way that that got brought into having to be accepted in every single shop and being the standard unit of money, shouldn't there be, you know, a discussion around moving to the next phase?
Gabriel, cash has been around for 2,500 years, so it's not exactly the new kid on the block. And the reason it's been around that long is because it worked. And also, we've got to be a bit careful with progress. When Concorde came along, everybody was saying, eventually we'll all be travelling supersonically in passenger jets. Well, the reality is nobody's travelling supersonically in passenger jets because there are no supersonic passenger jets anymore. So progress is what works for human beings, and cash works. It's been around for 2,500 years because it worked, and it works today. And what we can't afford is for some businesses to dictate to us that we're not allowed to use cash. It's not allowed in France, as I said, it's not allowed all around the planet, and we are really outliers. It's the British people that are getting dictated to. So we've got to actually make sure we're not dictated to. We still have a genuine democracy here, and that we insist that the government pass laws to protect our right to use cash. It's as simple as that.
Well, Ron, you dealt with the devil's advocate argument very nicely there.
Thank you, Gabriel.
What is going on then at the moment? You mentioned this increase in the amount of cash going into the kind of society and throughout systems. Why? What is driving this rise in cash usage for shop purchases in recent times?
Well, we've come out of the pandemic, and obviously there were some false health scares during the pandemic, and also a lot of sales moved online. Internet sales went up to about 37% of retail sales during the pandemic because people couldn't shop elsewhere, but now they're down to under 30%, so people are starting to go back to real shops on the high street and are spending their money there. We've also got the situation that people are feeling hard up now, quite frankly, and they're finding it difficult to make ends meet, to use an old phrase, so they're actually using cash to budget. You know, if you go out in the evening, Gabriel, and you take a £20 note with you and you spend it, you know your money's gone. If you keep, you know, waving a contactless card around, you might spend too much. So to get a bit control of their lives, some people are using cash in that way. But we've also just got these people who don't want to be dictated to, people who believe in freedom and choice. And that's a lot of people, millions and millions of people now are saying, well, why are we going to let businesses say to us, we won't accept cash? And the worst thing is that it's not just commercial businesses. There are a lot of businesses who are funded by the government and local authorities who are actually, you know, like the train services, who are not allowing us to buy food on trains, because they say they're going cashless. Well, that can't be right. You know, if public money is subsidising these businesses, they've got to accept the public's cash. It doesn't make sense to let them say, well, you can't spend your cash here. So that's a huge issue now, and we want that addressed. But overall, we just need a law that says that all businesses must accept cash for in-person payments. And if we have a law like that, as they have in France and Spain and other countries, then the British public will get the protection they deserve.
So I was actually in the shop the other day, the petrol station, and someone was paying in cash, which they accepted. It was absolutely fine. But what I did notice was that the cashier was taking quite a lot of time to make sure that that cash was legit, that it was a real note. You know, obviously there's a lot of fraud with cash, a lot of fake cash in circulation. It is a large and severe problem. So how does your argument take into account that side of things? The fact that obviously some would argue that cash is a lot easier to counterfeit than the other side of things. I mean, you might just say digital currency is just as easy in terms of other areas to be hacked into or to be taken advantage of for vulnerable people. But how do you see the government taking kind of back control of the idea of fraudulent money within society?
Well, they've got to deal with online fraud, haven't they? 2 million people had their identities stolen last year, and it wasn't because they were spending cash, it was because they were working online. So let's not get too wound up about some counterfeit notes. There aren't that many counterfeit notes circulating. There might be some £50 notes and some £20 notes, but the retailers all have simple ways of detecting whether it's a counterfeit note or not. They're very simple note checkers they can use, whereas online, the fraudsters are becoming really, really clever and are outwitting many of us and taking away our identities and emptying our bank accounts, buying things in our names that we didn't actually want to buy, and so on. So we've got a huge problem there online because the people who are hacking are very clever and they make huge amounts of money taking our wealth away from us. Nobody can take your wealth away from you in that way if you stick to cash. If you've got £100 in your wallet, if you're lucky enough to have £100, yes, somebody could steal that £100, but that's all they'll get. If they go online and hack into your accounts, well, they can take everything you've got.
I suppose if you're a business owner and you're looking to potentially reintegrate cash back into your business, it would help you and be incentivized if the government, you know, those pens that people use, you can like scribble on a note and if nothing comes up, then, you know, it's a legit note. I mean, if they just made some kind of free resource that if you're a registered business, you can apply and get one of those straight away. Most, you know, businesses that potentially say they don't want to go back into cash because they're worried about these counterfeit notes, they could just grab one of those.
Yeah, of course.
Problem sorted. That'd be a great, nice little solution, wouldn't it?
Well, why wouldn't the banks that those businesses bank with provide those pens for them? Yeah, absolutely. Why can't they be provided to those businesses? But the problems of switching back to accepting cash, Gabriel, are exaggerated. In America, 8 states and many big cities have got laws now that say that businesses have to accept cash. And the businesses that have had to switch back to accepting cash have done it, and there'll be no complaints from them at all in the main, because they realise it's in the public interest. And they probably had the tills that they had taken out that accepted cash in storage anyway, so they've simply brought them back into the shop. So we can exaggerate the problems here. We've only been hearing about cashless for the last 10 years or so in this country. We had all those years when businesses were delighted to accept cash. So going back to those businesses accepting cash isn't a massive hurdle. They can do it, and they know it's in the public interest, so they should just get on with it.
So, Ron, not Don, it seems like cash is still king. So thank you very much for your time here today on That Money Show.
Well, thank you, Gabriel. You're a prince for giving this subject so much time. Thank you very much.
My absolute pleasure. Well, there you go, everyone. Is cash still king? Well, according to Ron, Don Ron, I might call him now today, it definitely still is. Do I still have cash? Yeah, I think I've got a little bit. I think I've got some cash. I think my grandma gave me some cash for my birthday. So thank you, grandma. You are keeping me in Ron's good books. So it's time for some questions, people. Time to answer the questions that you've been DMing us at That Money Show, or if you are watching live, this is your chance to ask the questions right now on the show, and I get to answer them live for you under the pressure of being on radio live. Some questions that have come in the meantime from Declan, who has DM'd us at That Money Show on Instagram, who says, I'm about to buy my first car. What should I consider before making this big purchase, especially during the holiday season when money can be tight? Well, of course, around money being tight, just make sure that you've budgeted for it, you've saved for it in the first place. A few key tips and tricks. Buying new. When you drive a car off the showroom, whatever it is, it loses roughly 10 to 30%. I know it's a big range, but at the lower end, that is 10% of its value immediately. So maybe think twice about buying new. The second thing is buy a car that fits your budget, not a car that you want, okay? A car that you need, not a one that you want. So if you are, you know, you've just started a brilliant brand new job, you live in London, you know, you're earning £40,000, £50,000 a year straight out of uni, you might think that you are made, you are set for life. You can't afford a Mercedes. You just can't. I mean, maybe if your parents are the Prince of Persia, don't know why I said that, but if they are, not that it's a country anymore, then maybe you can afford a Mercedes. But aside from that, please buy something within your budget. A budget is a really big one. Now, another thing that a lot of people do say online, and I'm not one to have tested this myself, so please do go and look at it, is that around the end of the year, car salesmen have specific targets they're trying to hit. So you can go in and actually negotiate much better deals with them because they're trying to hit targets, thresholds, end of years and stuff like that. So now might be actually quite a good time to go in and do that. But do remember, if you are buying or trying to finance a car, new or secondhand or anything like that, they will always make the car fit to your budget. Now, how do they do this? They'll either increase the interest rates, they'll elongate the length that you are paying it over. So if it's a lease, they might change the lease from 3 to 4 years. Or if you're financing it, it might go from 4 to 6 years. And all of a sudden, they say, how much can you afford per month? And you're like, well, you want me to pay £200 a month and I can only really afford 150. They'll be like, done, easy. They'll raise your deposit slightly. They'll tinker with the numbers. And all of a sudden, that car becomes affordable. Please always work out the full value that you will be paying on that car, including interest and over the entire period of time. You have to do the math. This is a big purchase, okay? This isn't one you can just go in and... The person who's trying to sell you the car will do whatever it takes to sell you the car. You are the only one in control of your budget and you are the only one that can look after it. A few other things is always just look at your range of options between financing, between leasing, between buying outright and understanding the benefits of all. And then that's kind of it. You'll be good. Like I said, just as long as you're not buying a car that's too crazy, you should be fine. But, oh, last thing. I always forget to mention this. I'm not sure why. Buying a car doesn't just cost the price of the car. Insurance, the MOT. The service costs. Make sure you've budgeted for every aspect of buying a car. Now, next question is by Jashan, live on the stream right now, who says, how do you measure the success of your portfolio? By returns, stability, or something else? Jashan, for me, the returns of my portfolio is about one thing. Am I able to put in the same amount or a certain amount every single month stashed away, and am I still sticking to the same goals that I have? So, I'm 27. I'm investing right now for about 30 or 40 years from now. So for me, I don't really care, for example, that right now the stock market is at an all-time high. It just isn't so relevant to me. So obviously I can look at the current portfolio and be like, it's a huge success. But if a market crashes tomorrow, am I going to say that it's a huge failure? Probably not. So for me, it's about, am I aware of what I've invested in? Am I still investing regularly and at a comfortable range? Am I still budgeting to allow myself to invest fairly? And lastly, do I still believe in the portfolio that I've built? And am I just allocating the money towards things that I still apply to my long-term vision with money? And then the last question from Rachel. I'm going on a Christmas holiday abroad and I'm thinking of using a disposable debit card for security. Is this a safe option and are there any hidden fees I should watch out for? Rachel, sounds like a brilliant idea. Disposable credit cards or debit cards are like kind of the virtual ones that they give you in your app or whatever it is that you can kind of use it once and then you never use it again. It's a brilliant way for security, of course. Now, the one thing I would always ask you to look out for is there are so many cards, debit cards, credit cards, virtual cards, digital banks, even classic banks that make it really, really cheap to send abroad. In terms of a lot of old-fashioned cards charge you like an FX fee, so a foreign exchange fee for spending in a different currency. You can find so many different accounts right now that basically don't have this. They will just give you, if you tap with your card, it's the live interchange rate. There's no commission. There's no something added on top. Make sure you got one of those cards, please, for the love of God. Anyway, that is all we have time for today. So I do want to thank all of our guests. Of course, I've got to thank Don Ron. Don Ron, an absolute king to talk about cash, and also Kim Hulse, the business consultant that helped us understand the value of reward cards, points, and loyalty schemes. For those who don't listen to us, you can catch us live every single week on the FUBAR Radio app. Otherwise, we are at That Money Show on Instagram. You can catch us and listen back on every podcasting platform at That Money Show, or just That Money Show. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And as promised, roughly 55 minutes ago, you are now officially better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.